Good morning, it's Nancy Williams in for the Zesty Garden with Petals and Prose. And I'd like to read you today another little essay about spring by Sue Hubbell in her book, A Country Year. She's kind of talking about how we retire from things as we get older. She writes, "Early this morning before I left to work with the bees, I went to see how the rhubarb was coming along. My brother Bill and his wife Anne are going to be here for a visit soon, and I want to make them a rhubarb pie. It is Bill's favorite. Back when there were two of us here to eat and do the work, I had a big garden between a grove of pepperidge trees and the old road down to the river. I enjoyed the work that was necessary to produce, by midsummer, the neat rows of beans and beets, carrots, potatoes, corn, tomatoes, Swiss chard, onions, lettuce. Good flavor and amazing hues. I mulched the plants with newspaper and straw to keep moisture in and weeds out. I planted peas along the inside of the garden fence. The plants blossomed and produced tender pods, and throughout the garden I had bright gold and orange marigolds. They helped to protect the vegetables, because bugs dislike and avoid their flowers, avoiding the vegetables at the same time. For one person, a garden is not worth the work, which comes for the most part just when I am busiest with the bees. But sometimes I still clear away a little corner of the patch and plant a few tomatoes and lettuces for summer salad. This year, however, there are only the tough perennials that can hold their own against weeds. A few strawberries still grow, but the turtles will get the fruit before I do. Rhubarb, asparagus, and feisty elephant garlic are flourishing. The herbs, particularly mint, feral plants that they are spreading. The garden is being taken over by wildness. Shoots of pepperidge growing up in it from the roots of a nearby tree will become a new grove in a few years and claim the garden as their own. Living even the modestly domestic life that I do in a wild place requires a constant balancing act. While I was out in the garden looking at the rhubarb, wild things were asserting their rights in the cabin. The termites were swarming up out of the floor in the old part, which is my living room. They've been doing this for a 10 to 12 hour period in the springtime for the past several years, and today was their day. The living room in the original one-room cabin built here 50 years ago. Like many Ozark cabins, its underpinnings are a series of 2x4s balanced on paired rocks on the bare ground. It is protected, damp, and warm under there, a perfect habitat for termites, and they feast upon the 2x4s and probably on the floor itself. Our houses are only a minor source of food for termites, and if we humans did not have a penchant for building things out of wood, we would look upon them with kindness for the role they play in turning dead and fallen wood into soil. The soil provides the base and nutrient for new growing plants, so the termites give the wheel of process an important turn. There are more than 2,000 species of termites, but in North America, not a favorable climate for them. There are a scant 41. Of these, the subterranean termites who belong to the family Rhinotermitidae are the ones who most alarm human beings. Termites are social. Their eating habits make them so. Although some people call them flying ants, they are not related to ants, but to cockroaches. Like some roaches, they contain within their gut microorganisms that process cellulose, transforming it into a food they pass between one termite and another by anal feeding. This makes social organization necessary. Most of the termites within a colony are sterile workers, and in some species, soldiers with big heads and jaws, who protect the colony against enemies, usually ants. The workers of these subterranean species don't have the hard, chitinous body covering of many other insects. They must construct tunnels to their above-ground food sources in order to protect their pale, delicate, wingless bodies. The tunnels are made of fecal pellets, a building material that also requires a cooperative social structure. These tunnels, scaling the face of a concrete foundation, are often the first sign that we have that our houses are providing termite dinners. The termites I saw swarming out of my floor this morning were the reproductive, the alates, winged, unmated males and females who had emerged from the underground nests to establish new colonies. Their wings are weak and they can't fly far. When they land, they break off their wings by pressing the tips to the floor. After a minimal courtship, the future king and queen of a new colony pair off, select a suitable spot for a nest, and begin excavating a burrow, from which they will never again emerge. From the eggs that the queen lays, sterile offspring will appear to build up the colony and do its work. The mother queen lives for many years, and when she begins to fail, she is replaced by secondary reproductives. So it is possible for a termite colony to live as long as its food supply. The termites that eat our North American houses are regarded as fairly primitive species by entomologists. The tunnels that they build to their food supply free them only a little from their food sources. The most primitive of all are prisoners to their food and must live within the food. A happy circumstance for those who want to study them, like the researcher. I read about, years ago, a researcher who kept a prospering colony of primitive termites in a block of wood inside a bottle in his office. No special heat or humidity was required, and they needed no care or attention. I don't suppose there are that many of these less sophisticated termites under my floor, but even if there were, I wouldn't worry about them. Perhaps it's because I've never owned a television set and am therefore spared what I hear are terrifying advertisements that depict termites and scare homeowners into buying the services of pest control companies. But I also know that in temperate climates it takes termites a long time to eat up something as big as my cabin. I still have time before wildness takes it, and tonight I will simply sweep up the shed termite wings on the living room floor. I think it is sensible to let the garden go. I have neither the need for it nor the time to work it. But I am not yet quite ready to give up on shelter, so I am planning to replace some of the cabin sills and studs with treated lumber, to tear out the living room floor and put down fieldstone. This will not only be discouraging to the termites, but it will provide enough mass to equalize the temperature in the room by storing heat from the sunshine that streams through the windows. I cannot make this change right away because the labor and materials are too expensive, but termites who live in a temperate climate are leisurely creatures, and I believe I shall have the money for a new floor before they've finished with the old one. Thanks for being with me today. This is Nancy Williams for Petals and Prose at the Zesty Garden.